Welcome to Shanahan on Literacy, the site where we believe there is nothing more noble than to teach somebody to read. I'm Tim Shanahan, your host, and today we're going to talk about, are we teaching reading comprehension part two, six things every teacher should know about comprehension instruction. Now, previously I discussed, in my previous podcast, I discussed two observational studies, a landmark study from the 1970s and a valuable recent effort. Both of these studies aim to determine the amount of reading comprehension instruction in American schools, which, of course, required definitions. According to the older study, this one conducted by Dolores Durkin in 1978, comprehension instruction included any action teachers took to help children understand or work out the meaning of more than a single isolated word. The newer study, this one by Philip Capon and his colleagues, published in 2024, didn't provide a definition as much as a list of acceptable actions. Teaching word meaning knowledge counted as comprehension, as did developing background knowledge, selecting text to match lesson goals, establishing engaging and motivational context for reading, engaging students in collaborative learning, teaching comprehension strategies, teaching text structure, and engaging kids in high-quality discussions of text content. Durkin explicitly rejected the post-reading question and answer sessions so common in our schools. To her, that was assessment only, not instruction. Capon accepted the value of high-quality discussion, but distinguished that from the more typical quiz show routines that accompany reading. Neither study homed in on the most essential features of comprehension teaching, however. To me, it is insufficient to enable students to understand a story or article. If the aim isn't to alter reading behaviors for future texts, then it isn't comprehension instruction. Reading practice, even with comprehension, is not enough. So here are six important things that everyone should know about comprehension teaching. And the first one has to do with the amount of comprehension instruction. Now, both studies claim there was not enough of this kind of teaching going on. By Durkin's definition, there was almost zero such teaching, though that increased considerably when those Q&A sessions were counted. Capon found that 23% of reading instruction was on comprehension, which they thought was too low. Now, I have long argued for at least 2 hours per day of reading, writing, spelling, language instruction, with a quarter of that devoted to comprehension. Given that, I don't think our problem is too little comprehension time. It is that almost any kind of reading practice is claimed to build comprehension. Teachers have kids read texts. They ask questions to be sure the kids understood those texts. They might even do some other things, teaching the meanings of some of the words, providing relevant background information, and so on. Those actions are almost certain to ensure comprehension of the instructional text, but let's be honest, they have little likelihood of any generalizable impact. Second, the centrality of text. The Capon study credited the value of using texts that were relevant to the purposes of instruction, and boy, that inclusion deserves a hug. A good deal of reading comprehension instruction should take the form of directed reading, with a teacher guiding a group of students through a shared text. These communally read texts determine what can be taught. Given the wide range of things that readers need to learn, these texts must do double and triple duty. Too often, they're chosen to support narrow aspects of a curriculum. For instance, publishers right now are scrambling to ensure that reading texts expose kids to lots of information. Knowledge is in. But there's more to it than that. I'm happy to see science and history selections in the reading books. These subjects have been too long ignored. Unfortunately, these programs seem to espouse the idea that social studies and science provide knowledge, but literature does not. That's a big mistake. However, even if stories and poetry are in, knowledge should not be the only concern when selecting books for comprehension instruction. Students should learn to read narratives, expositions, and arguments, and to surmount the varied demands of different genres, rhetorical structures, and text conventions. Children need to be reading books that expose them to texts that will expose them to all of those structures and forms and conventions, and they should receive instructional guidance on how to read those. Another important consideration is the challenge level of these instructional texts. Teachers have been told to teach with books at the students' instructional levels, texts that could be read with 75 to 89% comprehension with no teacher support. That means we're often trying to teach students to comprehend books they can already read well. That's just the opposite of what's needed. Kids should be grappling with books they cannot read well, and instruction should transform those books into something comprehensible without the teacher reading them to the kids or telling them what they say. A third issue has to do with language comprehension. You can't tell from either the Durkin or Capon studies or from lots of other work on reading comprehension that language matters. Durkin specifically rejects vocabulary instruction as comprehension pedagogy, while Capon et al. Includes vocabulary and text structure. Much vocabulary instruction focuses on teaching students the meanings of words in the instructional texts, efforts mainly aimed at ensuring success with those texts. That would seem too narrow to count as comprehension instruction by the definition I gave earlier. However, it doesn't matter why students are being taught word meaning, since those words could come up in other texts. I would count this as part of comprehension teaching, though it's often conceived and delivered so poorly that it may not count as teaching at all. For one thing, introducing those words is not likely to lead to long-term learning. Any vocabulary that is taught needs to be reviewed frequently, and kids need to be induced to use those words. Another problem with this pre-teaching is that much of it is useless. The words selected for teaching may be defined explicitly in the text. Instead of guiding kids to recognize and make sense of the definitions in the text, reading comprehension, the pre-teaching encourages kids to ignore the text and just listen to what the teacher says. The same can be said for words that may not be defined explicitly in the text, but that could be figured out from context or morphology or the use of a dictionary. Telling those word meanings may discourage the use of those essential tools, and doing that certainly won't teach kids how to use those tools. Of course, language depends on more than words. Words are organized into sentences, and there are rules or conventions that dictate relationships among words. Formal grammar instruction may not improve reading comprehension, but there's extensive research showing that kids struggle to understand complex sentences, and that applied grammar instruction, that is, instruction aimed at guiding students to figure out the meanings of sentences, can improve comprehension. The same can be said about cohesion, another aspect of language. To comprehend text, readers must track the relationships of ideas across text, pronouns, synonyms, conjunctions. Cohesion can be an important source of confusion, and it can be taught profitably. And text organization is another way that ideas connect across a text, and Capon and his team wisely included this as a component of sound comprehension instruction. I don't know if any of these observational studies saw such teaching of language, but it is clear from the research that they should have been looking for it, and teachers should be providing it. Number 4, the development of knowledge. Research shows that reading comprehension depends on knowledge. Readers use knowledge to make sense of the information in text. The knowledge a reader brings to a text can reduce the cognitive load required to comprehend it. It can be the source of inferences. It can help with long-term recall of the information. Research shows that getting kids to think about what they already know about the text topic before they read, or increasing what the students know about the topic can both improve comprehension of that text, but does it have a general impact on reading comprehension? That's less clear. Unfortunately, research studies do not yet show wide transferability, though some recent research by James Kim and his colleague suggests that may be possible. Knowledge-oriented reading programs so far do not appear to be especially effective. This may be like vocabulary, however. Vocabulary teaching may have a positive impact on any text that uses those particular words, but not beyond that. Building knowledge on certain topics within reading lessons may improve future comprehension with texts on those topics, but not necessarily generally. I see no reason that comprehension instruction shouldn't lead to more knowledge, but at this point, building knowledge in itself should not count as reading comprehension instruction. Number 5, executive function. Executive function refers to processes used to manage or direct our cognition. Executive function allows you to focus your attention on one thing and not on another, or to remember something and ignore something else. Reading comprehension, like any cognitive activity, falls under the control of the executive function. There are many ways that instruction can address this. Teaching students to try to comprehend, that is, increasing their intentionality, and teaching them how to comprehend, in getting them to intentionally take actions that can improve comprehension, and teaching them how to monitor their success, recognizing when they're comprehending and when they're not, and how to fix that. There's an extensive body of research that shows that a small amount of this kind of teaching and guidance can have powerful impacts on comprehension and learning from text. Students should be taught strategies for making sense of text, and this kind of teaching should count as comprehension instruction. The Capon study found that such teaching was not uncommon, but that its quality was questionable. Too often, this teaching is aimed only at the instructional text. Teachers aren't guiding kids to use these strategies independently. The teaching too often fails to provide the conditional knowledge needed for students to be able to use it with other texts. Executive function instruction, to be effective, must be delivered with texts hard enough to require some strategic effort. The teaching then should both help students to surmount the problems and should offer advice as to how to recognize these problems in the future, as well as how to do these things independently. Number 6, questioning and answering. These studies rejected the questioning routine so common to classroom comprehension instruction. That doesn't mean teachers shouldn't ask questions, only that the questions need to be framed differently and they need to lead to teaching. Monitoring student comprehension should be purposeful. Think of any of the language teaching that I talked about earlier. Asking questions aimed at revealing whether students figured out the meaning of an undefined word, or of a complicated sentence, or of a subtle, cohesive relationship may reveal the need for comprehension guidance. Too many teachers and principals have supposed that asking questions like the ones on their state tests will lead to higher reading comprehension scores, and despite the research, they don't want to be convinced otherwise. The problem with their approach is that practicing responding to such question formats does not generalize. I might know that I'll be asked a main idea question, but how do I find the main idea in a different text? It just doesn't work. That doesn't mean that there are not questioning routines that can steer comprehension and learning. For instance, an important thing to watch for when reading stories are clues to the character's motivation. Students can learn to identify each character's goals and the actions that they take to try to accomplish those goals. Similarly, with history text, students might learn to create timelines for the various events. In other words, paying attention to the years and dates. They matter in history. The reason why these kinds of questioning routines can be useful is because they cue students to seek information that is identifiable in many texts. If the questions focus on that kind of information, then their impacts can be generalizable. Those kinds of questions tell students what we think is important. Add to this some teacher explanations about the value of seeking that kind of information and how you might identify it, and you have some pretty good comprehension teaching. That is my last word on comprehension today. If you'd like a written version of this, written copy of this, go to the Shanahan on Literacy website. There you will, if you look at the March 29th, 2025 entry, Are We Teaching Reading Comprehension Part 2? 6 Things Every Teacher Should Know About Comprehension Instruction. You'll be able to find the written copy of this. Now, one of the benefits of getting that written copy is that you can find the research references. And in this one, there are I think this is a record, 166, that is 166 research references in here, all about the teaching of reading comprehension. With that, I'm going to say thanks to Greg Johnson, our sound engineer, and thank you for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you up the road a piece.